in the table.
You have five.
No, Matt is a consultant.
Oh.
Yeah. So we'll dispense with the introductions and just move right into the review and approval of our August summary notes. Anyone want to move for approval or any discussion of them before we do that?
Motion to approve if there's no discussion.
Is there a second? I'm just with a second. All right, so the summary notes for August 28th have been moved and seconded. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Okay, unanimous. They're approved. All right, that takes us down to public comments. Don't see anyone on the virtual screen here as far as public and none in attendance, so we can move past that and go right into order of business. First one here is the pedestrian priority update. Eric, can you enlighten us on that one?
Yeah, so as you recall, last couple of meetings, we've been discussing the pedestrian project prioritization. We brought Kittleson on board. Matt Bell gave an introduction of the scope of the project. It's been a couple months, so he came back to give an update on kind of where they've landed on some of the project prioritization, and then also with the new kind of, I'm probably butchering this, Matt, you can jump in, but there's a list of criteria that they've used to establish this.
Nice.
And so they want to, he wants to just make sure they're capturing everything in an appropriate method, I guess, if you will. So take it away, Matt.
Yeah, happy to. You're right on. That's exactly where we left off last time, was we were talking a little bit about the various criteria that we were thinking about using as a basis for prioritization. And if you remember, a lot of that criteria was rooted in recent changes to the Oregon Transportation Planning Rule. And so without going into incredible detail there, I'll just say that the Transportation Planning Rule has been revised, and most of those revisions apply directly to cities within metropolitan areas such as Westland. And they provide guidance on things just like prioritization of pedestrian facilities. So it's convenient in that sense, and in the direction that you will likely need to go when you move into updating your transportation system plan sometime in the next 4 or 5 years or so. So we use that guidance in the transportation planning rule and the various factors that they identify there to serve as a basis for the prioritization. And what we have come up with is what I'll call a very preliminary list of a reprioritized list of your pedestrian system projects. And so what I'd like to share with you today, I've got just a couple of things. I'll share my screen and share just a couple of things. One is a table that kind of breaks down the various TPR rule references, the prioritization factors, how those factors were applied and what methodology we used, and then show you what the results of that prioritization was. And then essentially what I want to ask, I have about 3 or 4 questions I want to ask you, and we're not going to get to all that today, of course. So some of this information is going to come to you following up on this meeting and with a specific set of questions for you to gather some of your input from. So with that, I'll share my screen. Let's make sure I get the right one here. Window. And hopefully you guys are seeing.
Not yet. There we go.
Yeah. Okay. So if you're seeing an Excel spreadsheet and my cursor moving around, then you are in the right place. So this is that table, and it's kind of a, not too painfully big here, and I won't ask you to read anything off of the screen you're probably looking at there, but I'll just highlight again for you. This is the, these are the transportation planning rule references. A lot of it falls into OAR 660-012-0520, which is all about pedestrian planning requirements. And all the subsections there refer to specific prioritization factors that's essentially the state wants you to use as a basis for prioritization. I'm sorry, what was the question?
You're a little bit, I got the volume up, but it's still a little bit hard to hear.
Okay. Let me make sure I'm actually coming through my headset and not through my, let's see.
It's kind of echoey.
Okay, can you hear me any better?
Oh,
yeah. That's okay.
Yeah, sorry, I was going through the microphone on my laptop, which isn't as sophisticated. So again, looking at this spreadsheet and some of the different things that are shown here, we have all the various transportation planning goal references, and then we have the related criteria. And so if you remember from last time, we talked about these criteria in terms of how well the different projects line up with these. And so I'll go through them at a high level here. We have regional 2040 centers. So essentially, is the project located within a metro regional 2040 center? We have underserved populations. And the question here is the project in an area with a relatively high concentration of underserved populations? And so the city, this one's a little bit tricky just because the city doesn't tend to stand out when it comes to underserved folks. So we used what ODOT uses as a basis for this, and that's the something called the Transportation Disadvantage Index. That index takes a variety of different demographic data and kind of rolls it up into one to provide some differentiation between various census blocks within our block groups, rather, within the city. So I'll provide more detail on that whenever we summarize this in a report. But essentially, it's looking at demographics and making sure that we're trying to target projects in an area with higher concentrations of some of these underserved folks. Next, we have something called pedestrian risk factors. And this is an area where I have a question for you guys. And so risk factors, this is a different type of a measure. It's a way to look at a corridor or a roadway or an intersection or something and identify whether or not it poses a significant amount of risk to people walking. They have similar set of factors for people biking. And so those factors, probably not surprising here, are things like travel speeds, traffic volumes, the width of the roadway, and then other things like functional classifications, the number of travel lanes, whether or not there's a pedestrian facility, what the adjacent land use is, and then whether or not there's any schools or transit stops within the proximity. Things like school land use, schools, transit stops, these are all an indicator that there might be a higher level of pedestrian activity in and around some of these places. So all these factors kind of play into something called pedestrian safety risk. And we just got four more here. We have pedestrian crash history. So what's the history of both fatal and in some cases non-fatal pedestrian crashes? Key pedestrian destinations, and there's just a couple of these, but I'll come back to this one. Pedestrian system investments. This is where there's actually the city is making investments to create new connections, to fill gaps in a network, or to potentially expand that network. And then the last one is called scenario plan, which is really just intending to help the metro area implement their own scenario planning. So as you might be well aware, Metro has a variety of designations along corridors, including those in West Lynn, where they want to emphasize pedestrian travel. And so you have a series of pedestrian parkways and pedestrian corridors within the city that are intended to serve like more regional travel for pedestrians. You have similar routes for cyclists and other things. So we take these factors and we develop some questions for ourselves. So in that example I provided previously about Metro Regional 2040 centers, is the project located in this place? It's a pretty simple input, either a yes or a no.
It may be that a portion of the project is in there, maybe the portion of the project is out, could be that the whole thing is in there, but we went with kind of a simple binary yes, no. We then take that value and we scale it up and down, and we'll come back to weighting. We can apply a weight, and then we come up with an overall score. So I'm going to jump off this table, but again, you'll get a chance to look at this. And so the way the scores work is, and I just have a few project examples I'll go over with you here, is the scores, they take, or sorry, I'm going to bounce back. The scores, they take the input value, they apply a score. In some cases, those scores are averaged up and then added to the other scores that in some cases are also averaged, and then we come up with an overall score for every individual project. And I'm going to actually jump over to the map real quick. And so here is the preliminary, and I want to emphasize that word preliminary. Preliminary rankings of projects. So the dark black are the higher priority, and I'm just put that in quotes, but they're the ones that are scoring the highest. The blue are fall into that kind of middle category, and then the light blue fall into.
We're not seeing your map.
Oh, you're not seeing the map. Uh-oh. Yep. Anyway, let me try. So you guys are still looking at the spreadsheet here.
Yes.
This is more. Oh, there we go. I'm going to go entire screen, and then I can move around here. Okay. So now looking at the map. So again, the black lines are showing what are the projects that score the highest, followed by the dark blue and then the light blue. And so what you can see when you look at this is that the way that the criteria are set up, the way the scoring is set up, what this is emphasizing, and this is something that we anticipated, is it's emphasizing some of the higher classification, higher speed, higher volume, you know, potentially wider roadway corridors where there's potentially a higher level of activity. It's also emphasizing corridors where there are a number of other key pedestrian destinations in the area. And so there's a couple I want to highlight. I want to just spend a minute talking about number 7 and number 8. Both of these are located on Blankenship Road. And then I want to talk about projects 50 and 51. I understand that this area over here up on Sunset Avenue is potentially a focus of this group in terms of like providing connections to the schools in the area. So I just want to kind of highlight some of the dynamics between these two different areas. Now, maybe I'll split the screen here so you can kind of see both things going at once. Okay.
Yeah.
Is that clear enough for folks? Can you see that okay?
That'll work.
Okay. So let's start off by looking at number 7 and number 8. So both of these projects, again, are located on Blankenship. Both projects involve installing sidewalks on one side of the road or the other. One of these projects, number P7, is located within a regional Metro Regional 2040 Center. So there's a Regional 2040 Center that kind of wraps itself around 10th and sort of follows Willamette Falls Drive down here in the area. So number 7 falls into that Metro 2040 Center. Number 8 does not. Both of them have a travel speed, or pardon me, both of them have a TDI score that are similar. So that means the demographics that make up the area that is in 7 and 8 are, they're kind of at the lower end of the spectrum overall, about 0.97. Travel speeds at 35. We don't have volume or roadway width data, and I'll come back to that one. Both are major collectors. Both have two travel lanes in this location. The sidewalk facilities in this area are incomplete. Number 7 has a mixed-use residential, which we've identified as being maybe a larger focus area for providing PED facilities. Number 8 has more of a multifamily residential, so this is the underlying zoning in the area. Neither of these are within a quarter mile of schools. Both of them are within a quarter mile of transit stops. Neither one of them have any PED-related crashes nearby. Neither one have any civic buildings or parks nearby. This one, I feel like we did something wrong for this one, because clearly there's a park right here down by Tandler Drive. It may be that our GIS data just didn't pick up on that one, so we need to check what happened there. Neither one of these are on a PED parkway or PED corridor, so they don't have the regional designation there. Neither one of them, this one's a little bit trickier, but neither one of them are connecting to an existing system, but they're both filling a gap. And so you can kind of see that there is an existing sidewalk network along Salamo with a gap here along 7. And then there's existing facilities on Blankenship and then a gap along 8 across I-205 there, and then another system over here. So arguably you could say it's both, but in the end we end up with just the fills the gap. So the overall score for 7 and 8 are 292 and 237, and I can get into the scoring if you want to get into that. And then there's a rank here. So we have our rank. I'm going to hide this rank for just a moment. We have a rank of, yeah, please.
Sorry. So does connectivity only count if there's sidewalk on both sides? Because there's sidewalk on number 8. There's sidewalk on one side.
As well as number 7. There's sidewalk.
Yeah.
On one side.
That's correct. Yeah, the connectivity one is probably one of the more subjective of the criteria in here, where we're looking at whether or not it's connecting into an existing system or if it's filling a gap. There's another criteria. So one of the questions I want to ask you guys about, and this will be more applicable when we get over here, is just generally expanding the network. That's another criteria that's offered within the Oregon Transportation Planning Rule, and something that we considered, but then we also thought that it might be that it gets applied everywhere. So sometimes whenever we have a criteria that scores essentially the same across a network, we don't use it because then we don't really get any differentiation. But based on how we're scoring these things and based on how we're creating like an average overall, I think it would make a difference. I think it would be worth adding that back in. So, but great question there. And so we have a ranking of 5 and 12. So 7 ranks a little bit higher than 8. And that could be just simply the Metro Region 2047 is the kind of the key differentiator in there. There's a couple other things. But actually, there was a PED-involved crash on 8, now that I say that. So we did have a PED crash over there. But so there's something in this list of criteria is kicking 7 just a little bit above 8. And so I'll also spoilers, the 50 and 51 are kind of at towards the bottom end of that ranking. So there's a total of yeah.
Matt, the ranking 5 and 12, that ranking pertains to what? Just projects in West Lynn, of all the projects in West Lynn that you're looking at?
That's right. We have about 90 projects that we're looking at total. So of those 90 projects, of project number 7 ranks in the top 5. Project number 8 is in the top 12, and then looks like project number 50 is kind of at the bottom.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah. So going back, I'll do this a little bit quicker this time, just because I think you see this so far. So the projects 50 and 51 over here on around Sunset Avenue. They're actually specifically 50 is on Sunset, 51 is on Sussex Street. So Metro, neither of them are Metro 2040 Center. They do have a little bit of a bump in the TDI score, so there might be just a slightly higher concentration of some of those underserved folks in that area. Slightly lower speeds, and not, you know, we made a decision. I say we as in me, made a decision about scoring some of these things higher or lower. So another question you might think about is, do we want to emphasize projects in higher speed facilities or on lower speed facilities? So in this case, the higher speed facilities is getting a little bit higher of a score, so than the lower speed. Sunset is a major collector, whereas Sussex is a local. These are both in single family residential areas, which again, we're really emphasizing the mixed use and the multifamily. So single family as one of the lower scoring ones. Doesn't have to be that way, but that's just how we've done it. Proximity to schools. So 51 gets that proximity to school, whereas 50 does not. And that's another one of the things we want to look at and see if maybe when we're doing our analysis, we're not picking up if the entire segment is within that quarter mile versus a portion of the segment. So we're going to look back at this proximity to schools. We are not within a proximity of transit. There are no PED-related crashes, no civic buildings or parks, which is another kind of, again, something fishy's going on with our parks. Not on a PED parkway or corridor. And in this case, because there's just a general lack of connectivity in this area, we don't have any scores for connecting into an existing facility or filling gaps. You're essentially just constructing new sidewalks. I think that's the assumption here. So if we added that additional criteria in the connectivity piece where we're expanding the network, these guys would get scored in that way. But you know, on the whole, when you look at all the criteria, it's definitely weighted's not the word I want to use. It's definitely emphasizing projects, like I said earlier, on higher classification roadways with higher speeds and higher volumes and potentially some more challenges. So I wanted to highlight those two because, again, we've got a very different dynamic kind of at the higher end of the ranking versus at the lower end of the ranking, and two kind of fundamentally different sets of projects.
So what's making that emphasis? Is it because of the increase in the speed or what?
Well, one thing I mentioned, and this is an area that we've just kind of scratching at a little bit, but I'll go back to this table for a moment. What this table is showing, and there it is. It's doing funny things. Is for one, right now we're weighting everything equally. So there is no weighting being applied. So we're not weighting safety, or we're not weighting access to public or access to schools or transit stops. We're not weighting anything any differently. That's one thing that like we'd ask this group to do, is to help us make some of those more goal type of or community value type of assessments, and say we think that safety should be weighted heavier than connectivity, or we think that like we should provide more connections for people in underserved populations. So taking some of these higher level, the overarching kind of prioritization factors, the things shown in bold here, and helping us understand if there is, if we should be weighting some of these things differently. That's number one. Another one, and I'll email you guys this again, so you don't, we can hash this out if you want. But number two would be, do we have the right factors in general, and are we thinking about these the right way? In other words, like when we think about speeds and volumes and roadway widths and classification, do we want to emphasize facilities where there are higher speeds and higher volume and higher width and higher classification as the focus of the money we're spending on sidewalk projects? Or do we want to emphasize something else? So I think that's another question. And then the last question, maybe just to keep it simple here, is that, and this is something I was sharing with Eric earlier, is that right now proximity to schools and proximity to transit stops is sitting here in risk factors, because again, these tend to be places that generate lots of pedestrian trips. So you get a lot more pedestrian activity. And so it just kind of falls into that risk factor, but it could just as easily come down here into pedestrian destinations, because clearly a school and a transit stop, just like a civic building and a park, is a destination for people walking. What that would do is that would actually, so I told you I hit a score. It doesn't do as much as we thought it might do. It actually didn't change the ranking for, I made that shift, Eric, in the last half an hour or so. It didn't change the ranking for these guys that much. So just move things around a little bit. Looks like number 51, which is, so the one that's closest to the school, got bumped up the highest there. I think this one also, So that could be one thing. And then the last thing, I promise this is the last question, is right now we're averaging up, we're taking the average of all these scores. So whether it's pedestrian destinations or it's risk factors or it's any of these things, we're taking an average. So when we take those averages, we're diluting the value of any one of these things kind of individually. So if you had higher speeds and volumes and width, but you were a low class and relatively few travel lanes and no sidewalks or something, then you're when you're averaging these scores, you're not getting the kind of cumulative effect. Maybe an easier way to think about it is if you're within close proximity to schools, transit stops, parks, and civic buildings, then you're either going to get 10 points as an average of the four, or you're going to get 40 points as a kind of a cumulative of all four places. Does that make sense?
Mm. So you're asking whether or not to average or look at the cumulative. Is that the question?
Well, I'm kind of throwing out ideas about how we could potentially tweak the scoring. So there could be a couple ways of approaching this. One way could be that you take a look at this map, which again, I'll emphasize the preliminary nature of this map. And just the first question is, does this make sense? If the answer is no, we wanted to see some of these key corridors in the higher and around the schools. We want to see those number one. Or we wanted to see some of these other, like what doesn't make sense about this map? And if there is something that you can pinpoint about what doesn't make sense, and like say, we think proximity to schools is more important. Like, what can you do for us to make proximity to schools more important? We think providing connections to transit stops, to providing connections for underserved population, any one of these things, we think this is more important, and this is why. So it might be easier if you think about it in terms of how we have it preliminarily ranked, and then identify why you think it's off in some way. That might be the easiest way to go about it.
Another question, Matt. Proximity to school and any of the anything you've shown up, is that also, how does that relate to safe routes to school? Is there a map that shows safe routes to school, and do you look at these streets and these gaps and score them higher or whatever if they are identified as a safe route to school?
So we do not, and that's a great question. That's an example, I think, of a criteria that could be used as a basis for this prioritization. Something that I this is a bit of a convoluted point here, but I'll try it anyway, is safe routes to school could potentially be its own kind of pot of money that is available at the state level, in some cases at the federal level. And so that might be money that you can, like, whatever prioritization we come up with doesn't preclude you from funding any project at any point in time. And I think that anything that's on a safe routes to school automatically falls into that like category or potential pool of money for safe routes to school projects. Mm-hmm. So that said, if you want your ranking to reflect that, then we can do that. But I would want to preserve, if we didn't think about how that was affecting some of the other criteria, you could still end up with some of these higher classification, higher volume, higher speed facilities is still ranking in the higher, just because of all the rest of the criteria.
Got a question. Yeah. Are we open for questions?
Yeah, sure.
Okay. So I just wonder, I'm going to point at the map here. This section right here on Rosemont. You know, when I look at everybody down here and trying to get up to the top.
He's pointing at 91, Matt.
Yeah, 91.
Okay.
91 is a way for people all the way down in here. Now, of course, Sunset and Skyline have been identified as ways to get up on top. But this is such a key corridor out through here and all the way down to Stafford and then down Salamo or back down to the city. Mm-hmm. It seems to me we need some kind of strategic loops to get people to be able to walk or bike. You know, I drove down Willamette Falls Road today. That's never gonna be an area where we're going to be able to build that out without blasting a lot of rock off the hillside, right?
I think there is a plan.
There's a concept.
Yeah, well, it's going to be an expensive one. I mean, yeah. Listen, I was just, it was kind of struck me today. It's like, wow, this would be great, but for the people trying to go across the bridge to Oregon City or all the folks down here to come up to take advantage of this all the way out and have these big transportation, walking, biking loops. You know, I know we have a bike map and things. Really trying to maybe think about that as one of our criteria. Can we make some pretty clear loops that would build out for bike and pedestrians? Yeah. And instead of that, well, the piecemeal thing is important too. I'm not, don't get me wrong, but it's just something I've been thinking about.
That's a good point.
Yeah.
Hey Matt, while you're on that view, I was noticing 43 can come off the list. That was done several years ago.
This on Skyline? Okay.
We have a sidewalk all the way up.
A sidewalk on both sides?
No, on one.
On one side, yeah.
And that's where I wasn't clear in terms of whether this, how this treats a road that has sidewalk on one side. Do you still consider that a gap?
Right now we do, and that's a good point, and something that I think that we could consider. Most of the projects. And I have to go through and see if there are exceptions to this, but I believe most of the projects are bi-directional isn't quite right, but it's on one side of the road or the other. So there are very few places where you don't have sidewalks on at least one side. So most of the time we are filling gaps on one side of the road or the other. There are a few where we're filling in gaps on both sides, mm-hmm. and it's possible that could, you know, get a bump because you essentially have no sidewalk connectivity on either side of the road. So I would be happy to add that type of a criterion as well.
I would think that's important. One sidewalk versus no sidewalks at all. No sidewalk should be given priority.
Because I think if we had our pick, yeah, we'd have it on both sides.
Well, ideally, yeah, sure. But you want it. You want to fill in a gap where there is no sidewalk at all versus one where one side of the street already has a sidewalk.
That improves your safety after a lot, just having one side.
Yeah, it's better than nothing. Yeah.
Okay, well, again, I got to put together a more specific request for y'all. I want to share this table and share the map, and I'll come up with a list of just a few questions, much like what we're talking about today. Are there other criteria that we could be thinking about? Are there ways that we could think about the criteria we're using a little bit differently? Those are a couple of those questions, but I think holistically, what you were just highlighting is that, are there any other corridors that should be higher in the ranking, and if you could just briefly expand on why, then we can look and see how we could tweak the criteria to make that happen. We're really trying to get to a purely data-driven process here, which generally speaking can get us close but doesn't usually get us all the way there. There's always some other, whether it's again community values or if it's some other consideration that when we're looking at it from 10,000 feet at a map, we're not, you know, we may not be thinking about it. Grade, could be one.
lighting could be another one.
I'm going to throw one out and just to get reaction to it. And I don't know whether it falls under any of these factors, but what about public demand? What if we have heard from a number of citizens about the need or their desire? Does that count? Do you take that into consideration?
We do generally, and if this were being done in a and more of a, I'd say like a public and more of a public forum as part of a public involvement plan, you know, something like part of a larger TSP, we would usually take this same approach in coming up with the prioritization, and then we would take it to the public, whether that was through some kind of an open house or some kind of an advisory committee or something else. And we would solicit input from the public, probably even virtually. And then we would take that input, and depending on whether it was input on the projects themselves or input on the criteria, we would tweak it. So that is usually, yes, that's usually a part of it. This, because we're doing this in a little, you know, a little bit more isolated, there's just, yeah, they're at this point, we don't have public input on it.
I have a question.
Go ahead, Rick.
What about the streets over by the new middle school? We've had discussion earlier, and I didn't hear anything in our discussion tonight. Maybe I missed that. There you go. Okay.
Yeah, most of these rank pretty well, and I'd say, or at least in that middle category, and I'd say it's primarily just because they're, there's a lot going on over here. It's also part of that. There's another regional center over here. There's lots of parks. There's the schools. There's lots of there's some existing connectivity, as you're highlighting there. So there's ranks higher than some of the other ones.
Thank you. I just didn't see it before.
Yeah.
Good. Well, that's an excellent start. Something for us to nibble on for sure. So you'll be refining this then, and we'll see another iteration.
Yes, the next meeting will provide you with the next iteration of it. In the meantime, Eric and I'll work together on a specific request of you to take a look at some things.
Great, excellent.
Great. Sorry, I took longer than I said I would, Eric. I'll get out of your guys' hair.
Yeah.
Thanks.
Yeah.
Appreciate it.
Have a good rest of your meeting.
Yeah.
I kind of feel like kind of torn on the public input because it changes so much. I mean,
the thing is with open houses or public hearings, you know, yeah. Someone that people can show up, you know, just from anywhere, all of a sudden, you know, it becomes a hot button issue. I was thinking more in terms of what we have experienced, you know, in the last year with particular projects and the number of people that have come forward. And said, you know, this is important. This is the most important thing on the planet right now. And does that count? But it can backfire because it's just a matter of rousing the troops, so to speak, and bringing them in and saying that this is important to us. And then all of a sudden, you know, now you've got three or four of them that you're trying to figure out, oh gosh.
Expanded.
Yeah. So I think it's a dangerous, path to go down.
Yeah.
I mean, I thought the map spelled it out pretty well. In the 20 years that I've lived here, think about all the development, all the families and all the kids. Mm-hmm. Now with kid mobility, it's insane. But it's all the little pieces now that are, you know, if you add them up, I mean, there's so many projects there.
Yeah. And
yeah. Depending on what neighborhood you live in, you know.
That's right.
That's going to be your priority.
Right. I would like to see more emphasis on your point on the safe routes, because that's,
yeah,
it's typically involved around the school. So
exactly.
Somehow.
Yeah. But he did make a point that in terms of funding those kinds of projects, those can be set aside as an entirely different pool of projects. Yes, no?
We don't typically meet that demographic to get those types of grants.
Ah.
It's the underserved, it's the high accident crash rates, all stuff that we don't fortunately have.
Yeah, okay.
We don't, yeah. We're not able to get those.
So there's
I'm not saying that there's none that we couldn't get.
No, but we're at sort of a disadvantage. If we were to separate those out, we may never get to them. So we really need to incorporate them and then look at them as a
so that might be a good segue if there's not any more discussion.
Well, I want to just bring up a couple of points. So our question, I mean, could we, and we've talked about this before, could we look at some loops within the city and really try to drill down on that and see if we can get dollars for a not just pedestrian but a true bike loop, right?
I'm just to understand what are we wanting to accomplish that you're accomplishing with this concept.
Yeah, if somebody wants to ride a loop in West Lynn, right?
Okay.
A safe loop and not be out on the road. That's what I'm
But that's not sidewalks, that's bike lanes.
What is Salamo, the new project down the hill? What is that?
Shared use path.
Can be a shared use path. It doesn't have, you know, and I think that was my second point to think about is the full build out on both sides of the street, full blown sidewalk project with storm drains and all that, right? Versus a shared use path.
Which is what you were, is basically all the way out to Stafford.
Exactly. Right. So it would Metro, for instance, value this loop from the top of the West Lynn Hill all the way out to Stafford and around 43 back up, or connecting into Old Town and going out towards, you know, the new school and the bridge out there. Is there a way to package that where we can
I think get some money? There was talk about having kind of a regional bike corridor, and that's why part of the reason the concept plan along the line of Falls Drive was created, from the Wallison River through Main Street, and then a shared use path on, you had mentioned blasting in a lot of sense of stuff. So it'd be on the river
side
of the road.
Yeah.
With some retaining walls, I'm sure.
But yes, oh, for sure. Yeah.
But yeah.
Well, that would be the ideal, right? I mean, to connect into, you know, the city.
On 205, some kind of a bike head path, wasn't there?
At one time, there was talk about that, but I think that
it's not going anywhere.
That's a tough one, Jeff. I see the need for it, but also I think if we're talking about having limited dollars, I think these sidewalk infill gaps have to, because somebody that's comfortable, and I'm not a cyclist expert, but somebody that's comfortable riding on Willamette Falls Drive now is going to be comfortable riding whether there's a shared use path or not. You know what I'm saying? I'm not saying that it could be the connectivity, but
yeah. I think the public safety issue is more important than the recreational opportunity I have to ride my bike.
Or, I mean, it could be people commuting too.
Yeah, true.
But yeah, it's just like cutting the balance.
Right, man. Right. Totally get it.
Yeah, it's a good idea. And I guess we just have to decide how that factors in.
Well, maybe we can lay the bike path thing over the top of this and look at it too, see if there's.
Yeah, there is another part of, you know, we're just focused on the PED gaps with this project, but there is another chapter, it might be the same chapter in the TSP that talks about the bike.
Right. And I looked at that a little bit,
And
we'll get there. Okay. We just got
we're moving in the right direction. Okay, so that takes us to sidewalk fee discussion.
Yeah, so I stumbled onto a feed that Milwaukee has, and it's called SAFE program, Safe Access for Everyone. And it's, I don't have a ton of details, but it's basically in this fiscal year, I looked at their fee schedule, it's $6.50 for single family residents. There's a whole another list of fees depending on commercial per daily trips, multifamily, et cetera. But their goal in, I don't know, I've got to call in to try to get more information on this, but their goal is over a 9-year period to do almost 28 miles of sidewalk and multi-use paths and over 988.
Wow.
And so I think currently they're at like almost 3 miles of projects completed. And so my thought was this could be a great way to try to generate revenue,
yes,
to try to do these projects and not siphon it away from what we were talking earlier with Tamler falling apart. Because we're already a bunch of deferred maintenance on this pavement. So, right.
Do you know if they also have a street maintenance fee like we do?
They do.
They have that. So this is in addition to that.
Yeah. And their street maintenance fee isn't as much as ours from what I saw. Mm-hmm. But.
So this would just be an add on to the monthly utility.
Yeah.
I mean, it does raise money. It's just a tough pill as well.
Yeah.
For people.
Well, and I know right now too, especially with everything as expensive as it is. But, so I proposed this to the mayor and city manager, and there, because the mayor was talking about trying to pass another bond and to get these projects out under it. But I kind of like the just having a steady fee, and then we just keep taking these projects.
Oh, yeah. Off. And then you have a known capital budget that demonstrates that.
Because I had a 2018 bond, you know, we had 4 or 5 projects listed. We're able to do like 3 of them because it kept getting more expensive and blah, blah, blah.
Yeah.
But, So anyway, I'm sort of just getting this out in front of everybody try to see if this would be something that, I don't know how, I don't even know how to get this. I'm assuming it would have to go to a vote. I don't know.
Just to impose a new utility fee? I don't know.
I don't know how you.
I mean, the city council, you know, they determine whether the fees are going to be increased from biennium to biennium, right?
But I just feel like
to add a new fee, I don't know.
Because I know, like, when we in the UAB, when we go over 5%, it's got to go to the vote per the charter. So I think that somebody's going to have to do some research.
Yeah, sure, for sure.
But
sure.
Yeah. It seems like
it's an option. I mean, you'd have to look at various options. This is one of them. I guess the council would have to weigh other options like the bond measures or whatever. But I looked at the video that Milwaukee did. You know, it's a nice settled job. I mean,
sure.
Obviously, you know, they're making the pitch to the public why we have this and what the benefits are going to be.
Yeah.
So it has possibilities.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
And what did the mayor and the city manager say from
they liked the idea. I mean, it was a brief discussion, but it's just a matter of, you know, like I said, the mayor was on, or so there's a couple options floating around. It's just a matter of.
By the way, Rick, if you have questions or anything, just. I'm not trying to ignore you, but I'm not looking over here. So you just have to speak up if you have something to weigh in on, okay?
I would just add one comment about the fees. I think that the city needs to be very careful about considering the equity component to fees. When you impose a flat fee across all residences or businesses. It does not take into account ability to pay whatsoever. So $1 million home pays the same fee as a $300,000 home. And I think that's one of the issues that I have with these fees that are tacked onto our utility bill.
Yeah, that's a valid point.
So I just think it's something that needs to be considered, perhaps that we could look at an equity component of maybe for low income people and senior citizen low income or whatever, but.
Yeah, if you're low income, Milwaukee, you're exempt. Multifamily is cheaper than single family. So there's your kind of lower income component potentially.
It's a question I think we need to address, be prepared to talk about.
Yeah, oh, absolutely. No, fair enough.
Yeah.
Fair point.
Yeah, lots of discussion to be had.
Well, what I would, I guess what I would have to wait and see on is if the council has any interest in pursuing this, they likely will throw it back at us for a recommendation.
Yeah.
So I guess that before we invest a lot of time and energy on this subject, I would like to know what the council's thoughts are.
On that, another segue. So with this, you brought up safe routes. There's been a lot of stuff, discussion, kind of like what we had here before with the issues down at Hazy Creek and lack of infrastructure, sidewalk.
Yeah.
The next one is shifting now to Sunset. There's been a lot of people come to our traffic safety. We said we would look at it. They want a crosswalk.
Okay.
At various intersections, they've band together and passed a petition around and gotten over 80 petitions. And now they went to council a couple of weeks ago and brought the kids and various parents talked. And so Sunset is kind of the next hot topic. So the mayor said, we hear you and they want to have a work session. And I think we've tentatively scheduled it for the 4th of November. And I threw out the idea of a joint work session. I don't know if it'd be problematic. I think that is the first one of the month. So it's an early, they're doing the first ones of the month at 1 in the afternoon. So I don't know if that would be a problem or not, but we can get an invite sent out if you're all
what,
in.
What date did you say?
November 4th. But it would be to talk about, you know, the safe route stuff. Pose the idea of this fee, just whatever comes up in discussion.
Yeah. Can you compare that to the Cedar Oaks project that's just been completed, right?
Mm-hmm.
So how did that percolate up? Is there similarities between Sunset and what happened at Cedar Oaks and how that got it?
So out of the 90, I don't remember how many projects were on the safe route to school list now, I'm getting used with these pet projects in the TSP, but there was a scoring criteria just like what we're doing here. And that one actually bumped to the top of the list.
Okay.
And given that we, out of that bond money, we had started at 1 million, went to 1.2, we were like, okay, let's do the highest priority project on the list. So that's where that came to be.
So that I guess my question was, it wasn't kind of a big community uprising or concern like the Sunset thing is being brought up by the.
It's not that I'm aware of. Yeah. I think that Sunset folks are being more vocal than.
Yes.
Yeah.
Okay. Fair enough. Thank you.
Yeah. So November, potentially the council wants to be part of that. It would be but an afternoon meeting.
Yeah. Is that a problem?
That wouldn't necessarily be for me. I don't know how everyone else
sees this afternoon meeting.
1 o'clock.
1 o'clock. Okay.
Yeah. And I think Greg is retired, so it's better for him.
Unless he's not on one of his other committees.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So I guess, yeah,
gained it.
Yeah. What do you think about that, Rick?
Rick, that sounds good. I can make myself available on the 4th.
Okay.
All right. I'm 50-50. I might be out of town, so.
I assume that that would be an evening meeting?
No.
It's actually a 1 o'clock meeting.
Oh, okay. That'd be fine. I could do that. I just have an appointment in the early morning.
Yeah, that's good.
We'll get a head count and see what.
Yeah.
If we have 2 or 3 or 4 to mark, then that's sufficient.
Yeah.
Okay, let's move on to item 5, the general capital projects update. Sarah, got?
Nothing really, just that one of the folks right about it, Hayden Creek and Fields Bridge is just about wrapped up. They're doing some remaining bike paving, bike path paving tomorrow. The lane closures are just about done. Still have some street lights to put up, but yeah, that's been a challenge.
A street light, there could be a street light. Where is that going to go?
Along the school side, there shouldn't be street lights.
Street lights, not stop light. I was thinking of traffic lights. Street lights. I see, you can have a traffic light at the roundabout, but that's a new one. Okay, sorry about that. Okay, all right, fair enough. Any questions, Eric?
I just want to. So, are you planning your road maintenance projects for next year already, or is that?
We've got a list.
Yeah, is that on the website?
No.
No. Okay.
But I can provide it to you all if you like.
Yeah, I mean, I just would be curious of kind of what the
we have established the kind of next summers and then 2027 as well. It's all kind of hinged on getting some water lines replaced first.
Oh, really?
Yeah. and then we're also going into budget season, so we're looking to get another. It's 2020, so it's been close to 5 years ago since we had all the streets, the PCI update.
Yeah.
Your phone.
Yeah.
To establish kind of what kind of a condition they're in.
Yeah, that would be, I think that'd be good information to take a look and see where we stand. Okay. Yeah, that'd be excellent. Okay. All right. Item 6, board discussion announcements. I have information, I guess. Just throw out, and it's related in a sense, but it's not necessarily a TAB topic, I guess. But in September, I went to the city council's work session in September to express my opinion, my personal opinion, not as chair of this committee or anything. On the topic of requiring a public works permit for someone to repair a damaged sidewalk, public sidewalk, that has been damaged because of a street tree. It's sort of been a pet peeve of mine. I've brought it up before. But I happen to be a lucky homeowner who had two uplifted sidewalks right in front of my home, both caused by street trees. I took the initiative to have, because they were getting pretty high and posed, I thought, a hazard. And I just didn't want to see anyone hurt, nor did I want to be sued. So I took the initiative 2 years ago to repair one of them. Actually had the tree removed. It was significantly damaged by the big frost of 2020, whatever year that was, but the city chose not to have it taken out, so I had to contend with it. So I had the tree taken out. I had to have two new panels replaced,
And at that time, I simply let the concrete contractor handle the permitting and all that. I know I got, you know, charged extra because he had to take out a permit and so on. This last time, which was just here in the last month, I had a second one and hired a contractor. I actually got three different bids and each one of them asked the same question. Do you want to do it with a permit or not? I said, well, what's going to be the difference in cost? And in the two cases where I think they came back with that, it was about $550 or something like that additional cost if they had to take out a permit. And I said, well, you know, I really feel a responsibility and a duty as a good citizen to take out a permit. But I'll take care of the permit. I'll do that, right? So I then learned what the permitting requirements is. There's a $110 non-refundable application for a public works permit, and then you put down a $500 deposit, and then for reviewing your plans, or coming out to do a branding inspection and then coming out a second time to do a final inspection, they deduct from that deposit and then you get money back or pay more, I suppose, if they spend the additional. Anyway, the bottom line in this case, if I had had my contractor take out the permit, that I was going to be charged by $550 additional, and as it turned out, in my case, it cost me $330 for the application fee and all process. Yeah. So I went to the city council and said, you know, it's hard enough for citizens to accept the fact that they're responsible for repairing the sidewalk. Most citizens don't even see that or understand that, right? So they're upset when they learn that they have to take care of that sidewalk and replace it. So you've got a cost to repair that. Sometimes you have to take the tree out. If it's doing significant damage, you got to take a tree out.
And you got to get a permit.
And then on top of that, the city requires you to take out a permit. I said, it just seems wrong. It doesn't seem fair. When the damage has been caused by a street tree, which owner, the property owner, probably had nothing to do with having it put in. And turned out in my case, it was probably a bad choice of trees and created this significant thing. I just said, you know, it's a disincentive. You want people to be responsible and voluntarily take care of these things, but then you tack on this additional cost to them. It just doesn't seem right. And it is a disincentive for people to become responsible. And I just think the city should look at waiving that permit fee. I'm not saying not the requirement to get a permit, but waiving the fee when it can be demonstrated that the damage was caused by a street tree. And I went on to talk about in Oregon City, they actually have a grant program. The city of Oregon City will give you a grant of up to $250.
It's $1,500.
Yes, you're right.
I live over there.
Yeah, $1,500 to help you out, and you know.
Yeah.
But I mean,
there's some criteria there. Yeah.
Yeah. The point is that they're trying to offer incentives.
And they allowed you to, because I actually was, my neighborhood was hit pretty hard, mm-hmm. and where you would benefit from that, what they allowed you to do was, if you had a group of homeowners, you could piggyback all off on one permit. So pull one permit.
Yeah, and then multiple ways of making it easier for the citizen to take care of this problem. Anyway, so that was my pitch. And
no, I totally get it.
I don't know where it's gone.
Yeah, what's the rest of the story?
The city council was received. They said, the mayor said, you've made a very compelling case here. We'll refer this to staff. We'll get back to you on it. I haven't heard anything more about it, so I don't know.
It's something to consider. I mean, I.
Yeah, well, I really just think it's. Why make it?
And on this point too, really, I mean, why not waive? It is caused
by
either by storm damage, the tree has to go, or if it's upheaved in the sidewalk and it's got to go. Why not waive it to the permit? I don't even know what a tree is going to hit us here.
I think it's $200.
But.
Yeah.
No, the Oregon City thing was good. I mean, they had a. They were, you were capped at a, or they had a certain cap that they would allocate towards these applications. I don't know if they ended up. Continuing the program.
Up to $1,500, so it may not.
Well, their budget was $200,000.
Oh, yeah.
First serve.
Yeah. I think they had set aside.
This was a couple of years ago.
Yeah, they did. $75,000, I think it was. I think they set aside $75,000 for this program. And in the first year, I don't think that they spent it all.
So, but maybe if we had a fee, you could take a portion of that to put towards a program like that too.
Yeah.
You got to have somebody.
You got soaked for the concrete twice. And the tree removal and
the permit. Yeah. Right. That's why I said it.
That's personal.
No vacation of life is here for you.
I mean, it didn't break the bank, but it's there are a lot
just of just a panel or two. It's hard to even just find somebody to do.
Oh, well, I'm going to say something here. I probably shouldn't, but. Technically, the city requires that the concrete that goes in has to be commercial grade concrete, which means technically it's supposed to come out of a concrete truck. Do you know for a one panel, which in my case was like 5x6, it would have cost me $300 or $400 delivery fee for that concrete truck to come and deliver what to them is a laughable amount of concrete. Totally laughable. And the concrete guys that, you know, each one said, you know, if you go with the commercial concrete and that truck shows up, they're just gonna laugh their heads off. and you're gonna get soaked for probably $300 or $400. Anyway.
All right.
Yeah. Just want to let you know that I put that question out and we'll see what happens.
Yeah, I have heard nothing.
Yeah.
So I guess we should also send out an email. Sorry. About what if we didn't want to meet in December, if we need to move the meeting up a week.
Yeah, we always have. Yeah, so we should take a look at the December, the week before would be probably the 18th. Hey, I already have it down. Does that mean we already decided this at the beginning of the year?
It's possible.
We may have, because I already show on December 18th that we have a PAB meeting. So that actually may have been.
With SPN for a
while. You can go back and look at the agenda early. I have a hunch we did discuss this. It just seemed like we have. Anyway, December 18th is what I've got down, so okay. I think.
Well, that's mine's still on the 25th, so we'll double check.
Okay. Well, I think that we would be in agreement that that's the most logical way to have it.
Okay. You good with that, Rick?
Yes. I'm not going to meet on the 25th.
Yeah. Okay, well, let's plan on it, but yeah, if you want to do a follow up. You know, even though Mary kind of gave us the rundown of whose terms expire, I think it'd be good for Morgan to send us that just so we can have that in front of us, know when our terms are up. Looks like no one among us 4 years is at this the end of this year, but it good information. Oh, and also, can you check with Morgan concerning Jake?
Yeah.
And his term expires. He's got one more meeting to attend. If he doesn't apply for renewal, he's got one more meeting to attend.
They were trying to encourage us to say, hey, if you still want to stick around, you're free to do that.
Oh, shit. Yeah. Well, if his term expires, doesn't he have to reapply? Or is that an automatic that he would be?
I don't know. I feel like he stepped in for somebody.
I said Carl Turner. I think he filled Carl Turner's vacancy.
Gotcha.
Yeah. So anyway. All right. Anything else? Rick, anything on your mind? Okay then. I think we stand adjourned.
Thank you.
See you. Our next meeting again would be December 18th, unless we hear otherwise.
Yeah.
Good meeting, everybody.
Thanks.